This is 90s and Noughties UK, a podcast on UK pop culture of the 90s and 2000s. If you want to contact the show, email 90sandnoughties@gmail.com, tweet us on @90sandnoughtiesUK on Twitter, or check us out on Facebook, 90s and Noughties UK.
In just a moment, I will be joined by Kimberly Winters in the empty compartment. But first, this. I must admit, I have nothing to say at this point that I perhaps haven't already said in a previous podcast. I've been recording these in bulk, and I am extremely wary that at times I've been repeating myself. I'm trying not to do it, but it's just what happens. And it's when I do things like this that I'm constantly in awe of what people like Chris Moyles and Terry Wogan used to do when I was a child. I used to listen to Terry in the morning on the way to school, and apparently he just used to open up the mic and say the first thing that came into his head, essentially. Not really anything planned. Maybe there was a letter to read or an email or a message or whatever, a joke to read, a Janet and John, but nothing particularly planned per se, other than those things. And he used to do it with such wit and style, and it was just funny and delightful. And Chris Moyles, I mean, whenever I listened to him in the late 90s, early 2000s, he'd just go off on these giant, seemingly giant when you can compare it to commercial radio, 30 seconds, like 5 or 10 minute talking pieces, which I was just in awe of. And I feel quite sad that for a little while I stopped listening to radio, and it wasn't until about 2011, 2012 that I kind of found my feet again. And I would say, actually, if anyone wants any advice on podcasting, listen to other podcasts, listen to other radio, and you will find your feet within it. Now it's that point of the podcast where we do the empty compartment. Three questions with one guest. My guest today is Kimberly Winters. Tell me about yourself, Kimberly.
Well, I am in New Jersey, in the US. I am a child of the 80s and 90s, and I love pop culture. So I'm really excited to be here with you.
Excellent. That's just what we like to hear. We'll go on to the questions. We'll go with the first question or subject matter. Remember, these are 90s and noughties related questions. And I happen to notice that you're involved with food. So I'm going to ask you, how do you think food has changed since the 90s?
Ooh, I think there's a lot more interest, or at least more widely, in more artisan foods. Now, I'll admit, you know, I was between 10 and 19 in the 90s and into my 20s. So, you know, when I was 10, I was still eating things like Lunchables and Elio's Pizza. So not exactly a foodie's dream. But I think now even younger people, maybe not kids, but I think now even younger people are looking for more like artisan or more naturally made foods, things that aren't as processed as the things like Lunchables that we all enjoyed back when we were kids. So I think that probably is one of the biggest shifts that I've noticed. My focus within food is on vegan food. And even within that space, my goodness, there's so much more flavor, so many more options. If you were looking for 90s for vegan food in the 90s, a lot of it tasted like cardboard.
Yes, certainly vegetarian, vegan. There was maybe one option on a restaurant menu, and it was usually like maybe nut roast or
you know,
something along those lines. I mean, what do you think made that change?
I think the understanding of veganism is more there now. People are a lot more interested in why people do it. And I think that brings people who maybe wouldn't have even considered those types of options before, when they start to learn, not just from the ethical and animal rights perspective, but also what the way that we raise and harvest food now is an impact on the environment. It's an impact on our health. And so people come to it from different perspectives. And I think that that makes people more open to it. And even restaurants and companies who have been kind of resistant to the idea of having a vegan option, when they're finding that even people who don't identify with the word vegan in their life regularly are looking for those types of options because they're kind of in the mood for something different, they're starting to add those items to their menus and to their product lines.
Certainly. And as you say, so much more education about what is out there. I mean, I'm mostly dairy-free and mostly gluten-free. I say mostly because occasionally if you go to someone else's house and they don't have that diet, then, you know, it's okay now and again. But certainly I hadn't heard of, say, almond or oat milk until, you know, 5-10 years ago. Back in the 90s, it would have been almost unheard of.
Yeah, you had soy milk and rice milk. Those were your two best options. And they were not in the refrigerated section, in that dairy section. They were down that aisle with all the other weird stuff in boxes.
Oh, goodness. Well, we have discussed that, and I think we'll move on to the next question. This is normally where I hand it over to you to set the next subject, question, etc.
How about music in the 90s and noughties? Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? Like, what's your best music memory from that time?
Oh, best music memory. Now, that's a really tricky one.
It is, right?
People that know me will think I'm about to talk about a 70s rock band that had something of a renaissance in the 90s. However, I think what we're going to do is I'm going to say, well, mainly boy bands and pop acts from that particular era, because I was like 1 to 9 in the 90s. So I'm like prime target audience for some of this real commercial stuff. And a lot of it, it's funny, at the time, because I was into slightly older music, I don't think I gave some of the then current stuff the credit that maybe it deserved. And it wasn't until a decade later, in like the early 2010s, when there was this comeback of all these 90s pop acts, the likes of 5, Bewitched, 911, A1, etc. And suddenly I was like, actually, that was a pretty good time for things. I felt nostalgic, even if I didn't appreciate it at the time. What about you?
So being a teenager in the mid to late 90s in New Jersey, close, you know, within driving distance of New York City, I listened to so much hip hop. Tupac, Biggie, Mobb Deep. These were my favorites. Wu-Tang Clan, they were on a constant rotation in my CD player. Nas, how could I forget Nas? And when I think, I was like, I loved that music so much. There was just such a different feel. And I was also into the boy bands too. So I was still listening to things like Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, 98 Degrees. So it was a weird mix of things when you looked in my CD book, remember those? I had a CD book that had like 50 pages, and you'd go from you know, Wu-Tang Clan into 98 Degrees. It just didn't make a whole, Jessica Simpson, you know, it just didn't make a whole lot of sense. But when I think about the music, it fit every teen angsty mood that I had. There was an album I could put on that made me feel seen and heard and just better about myself.
Yeah. I have to say that with hip hop, I'm perhaps not as educated in that side of things. However, there are some rather large tracks from that era which I do gravitate towards. Which hip hop tracks kind of stick out to you?
Well, anything by Tupac. Mm-hmm. He was my favorite at the time. But to think of one specific song, or specifically, I guess if I'm going to go into an album, I'm going to think of a song. I would have to say GZA, the Genius from Wu-Tang, from his album Liquid Swords, the song Bible. And, you know, it stands for Basic Instructions Before Leaving Earth. And the thought that this song, which I was like hardcore atheist when I was a teenager, the fact that this song meant so much to me boggled my mind, because it really was about, you know, finding that direction within, you know, within this book and finding meaning. But that song, even to this day, I love listening. That's one of my favorite albums. I still put it on and I love, love, love that song.
I think sometimes, I haven't heard the song, by the way. I'm going to go and look it up afterwards. I think certainly in that genre, people don't realize, some people, sections, certainly elders when I was growing up, they didn't realize that these lyrics had meaning to them. The first I think I heard of Tupac in a mainstream setting was when they did that mashup with Elton John in the mid-2000s. It was a number one single in this country. The lyrics in it, like what you're saying there, they did mean something. There was something there. Like, people don't always associate those genres with the well-meaning lyrics. It's sort of the negative side of it can dominate. And actually, there's a lot of really interesting stuff in there.
I think Tupac, too, I think he considered himself a poet first and then a rapper second. You know, he was constantly writing lyrics that really read like poetry. And I remember once, I was probably like 15, a friend of mine and I were kind of arguing about music and about lyrics. And they were trying to tell me that, you know, hip hop doesn't have that meaning and there's no depth and it's just angry and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't tell them what I was reading. I just said, hey, listen to this poem I found. And I read a Tupac song and they were like, that is so beautiful. And we had like a real conversation about the lyrics. And then I told them what I'd read them and they were blown away.
So let's move on to the third question in this edition of The Empty Compartment. Let me ask you, Kimberly, movies. Did you see any movies at the cinema in the 90s?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure the first movie I saw in the theater was Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Right.
And that set off my lifelong love for Rick Moranis. Love him. I also definitely saw all the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies. I have a brother who's about 3 years younger than me. And so we were always playing, you know, with the Ninja Turtles and stuff. So we definitely saw all of those movies. Space Jam, so later in the 90s. I was a huge Michael Jordan fan as a kid, Chicago Bulls fan. My room had a pink carpet and a fluffy comforter, and everything else on the wall was like Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan. Those are definitely the ones that stand out. What about you?
I think I saw the Flintstones movie in the cinema, but I have no memory of why or where that was. I think I saw the 70s Robin Hood by Disney in the cinema. But again, I just remember seeing a widescreen, which we didn't have widescreens in those days. So it must have been in some kind of theater. And I think the first film I ever knowingly saw was Casper in the mid-90s. Then I saw Jumanji. That's a scary movie that I'm still... People wonder why I don't watch horror movies. Jumanji is the reason. Aww. Once you see Robin Williams caught in the floor on the big screen and, oh, no. I can't. Childhood stuff coming
Trauma.
Back. Yeah. Then I think the next film I saw would have been So in no particular order, Flubber, Dr. Dolittle, the Eddie Murphy one, Mouse Hunt with Nathan Lane in it. I think that's it. I think that's all the movies I saw in that decade, knowingly. I think the next film I saw after that was 102 Dalmatians. I had a moment where my dad was taking me to the theatre, I think, every other week. So I did see quite a lot of the family movies that were out at that point. Now I've rambled on about that. I need to ask you about the Chicago Bulls. I mean, why? Mm-hmm. Because I know they were huge at the time. Mm-hmm. Absolutely huge, because they won, what, 3 championships?
And then they took a break and then they won 3 more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So why the Chicago Bulls when I live in New Jersey, right? I should have been a Knicks fan, but I didn't know basketball when I discovered it. My family, we are baseball people. We're Mets fans. So baseball was always on in my house, but not basketball. But I was flipping through my tiny TV in my room one day, and I'm like pressing, like I'm click, but it was a button I had to turn. There was no remote for this TV. And I was clicking through, and there was a basketball game on. And I stopped on it, and there was a team wearing red and black. I really liked those colors at that time. And so I watched the game, and I enjoyed it. And so I started learning about basketball, you know, at the age of like, what, like 10, like you want to learn, like you find something new and you're like, I'm into this. And then you're like, everything in your life is around this new thing you're trying to learn about. So I did everything I could. I talked to friends at school, went to bookstores and got out books about basketball. And I was like hooked on this team. And because they were so good, they were on TV. I was able to see a lot of their games. So it was really luck. I didn't even know who Michael Jordan was when I found them, but I was like, wow, I picked like the best team. And yeah, they were my team, my whole like childhood all through the 90s. So I got to really love and live through all of that excitement of them winning all 6 of those championships.
I mean, that's the pure US 90s experience.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it?
It sure is.
Being able to see that. And then obviously that movie coming out in the middle, and I got that movie when it was released on video maybe a year later, and that is what introduced me to basketball, strangely enough. But I didn't, it's funny because there weren't any ways of actually doing that here, because they didn't show the games on the TV, and if they were, they were on late at night and they were on like pay-per-view or whatever. And of course no one was going to do that. And so it was, what, about 15 years later, 15, 16 years later, about a decade ago, one of our channels I just so happened to get was starting to show basketball. So it was like, oh, finally. And then went to see my local team, and that kind of spiraled from there. And it's that movie. And I should think it did it for a lot of people. And I think, isn't that the movie where they actually credited Michael Jordan above Bugs Bunny? And I remember sitting in I studied media at college. And I remember my lecturer saying, oh, they made such a big mistake with that, crediting Michael Jordan above it. It's like, it doesn't matter, because at that point, Michael Jordan probably was more known than most of those characters.
Mm-hmm. I would think so. And also, like, the things that I've learned about Michael Jordan as a person since then, he maybe even required that they do that.
I do think that movie probably did introduce basketball to the masses. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to go, or were you forced to go? first time going to the cinema, you know, and it's not really your choice.
It's not a cartoon. Like, why did my parents choose that one? I'm not sure. Maybe we did want to go. My brother and I were into all kinds of movies when we were kids. So maybe we thought it was like a cool idea, these kids being shrunk down. Another movie that I loved was Inner Space. I didn't see it in the theater, but I remember watching it. We had it like on video. And the idea of like shrinking somebody down really small and like traveling through someone else's body, I was like so interested in that, and it was so wild to me. So I don't know, maybe I don't remember which movie came out first, but who knows? It may have been a request of mine.
I feel like Inner Space came out first, and
okay,
I have a feeling, and it's not really based on anything other than gut instinct, I think, that Disney occasionally will look at what was out there and go, what kind, you know, can we make a movie like that? And so that's probably where Honey, I Shrunk the Kids came from. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, if anybody's going to send me any hate mail, it's a good movie. I've recently watched the trilogy, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. Although, to be fair... I think the sequel with the giant baby is probably better.
You think so?
mainly because it's a giant baby and you can't beat a giant baby. I put a tiny caveat on here because I feel like I've hit the nail on something. So is there a movie from the 90s that you wish you had seen on the screen? And I'm going to say Toy Story because I probably would have cut this out, but I said Toy Story when you asked me what mine was, and I didn't actually see it in the cinema. I've been asked the question, you know, what's your favorite 90s movie? And that's the one I've always said. What about yourself?
Movie I wish I'd seen in the theater. I don't know. All of them? And really, because it's just the experience of seeing something in the theater is so different than any movie you watch at home. And even when you've got like a pretty impressive setup at home, there's something about this collective experience of a group of people just together experiencing this world that we're put into for an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. And so I would say that I wish I'd seen every movie in the theater, because what an experience that is when you get a chance to do it.
I mean, that's fair enough. I think literally anything.
It's kind of a cop out too.
I mean, to be fair, I think something like Father of the Bride, I think would have been cool to have seen on the big screen. Something with Steve Martin in is pretty much always a win-win. Let's draw that to a close, every movie of the 90s. I think that's fair enough. I think that's fair enough, except the remake of That Darn Cat. That was awful.
Oh, and Steven Seagal movies. Maybe I wouldn't want to see those in the theater. Forgot about those.
And from what I'm hearing, Die Hard sequels as well. anything of that nature. Well, maybe Kindergarten Cop might be okay. There we are. So, before you leave us, tell us a little bit more about your podcast.
I host and I'm the creator of a podcast called Did You Bring the Hummus? And the mission of Did You Bring the Hummus is to inspire listeners to go vegan through powerful stories and meaningful conversation. So every one of my guests is already vegan. They share their story. We talk about some things that are meaningful to them. And we always talk about hummus.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check that out because I do love a good food show.
Oh.
Any talk about food or anything, I'm there.
Yeah. Good stuff. I think you'll enjoy it.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks once again to Kimberly Winters for joining me for that edition of The Empty Compartment. I will be back with another edition in the next episode. We're nearly at the last episode of the series. And what I should say, in case you've missed it, is that it won't be the last episode ever. It's simply the last episode of the series. And then... from then on, I'll be doing, you know, sporadic episodes, basically during seasonal times and whatnot. Let's bring this podcast to a close now. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you again for another edition. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for listening to 90s and Noughties UK, a podcast on UK pop culture of the 90s and 2000s. Please remember to rate, comment, and subscribe on your favourite podcast provider. If you want to contact the show, email 90sandnoughties@gmail.com, tweet us on @90sandnoughtiesUK on Twitter, or check us out on Facebook, 90s and Noughties UK.